Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry, I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, and bring in the man behind Pro Football Talk, the creator and editor-in-chief. It is Mike Florio, and this is just another day where we prove that the NFL doesn't sleep. Mike, thanks for joining us on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Hello, great to be with you as always, delaying my lunch on a Wednesday.
And we appreciate
like Rain Man, 5 minutes to Wapner.
I know, I do feel bad that now that we know your schedule, that you actually delay your lunch for us.
That's okay. It's worth it.
I gotta
it's
tell,
worth going hungry.
I got to tell you.
You guys are worth going hungry for.
Man, oh my
don't say
goodness.
It like that.
No, no, that's never the case. No. We don't want anybody hangry. We want people's blood sugar levels to be where they're supposed to be. Never.
Florio, I did a three-hour show, the draft show the other night with former Bears head coach Dave Wanstead, and for the first half an hour, he was just eating his pizza right on the air. So if you want to, I am immune to it now. Like, I can play through that. So if you want to eat whatever your lunch is while you're talking to us, please feel free.
I've got a whole ritual, though, with my lunch. It's complicated. It involves, you know, not interacting with other humans while I'm enjoying my food.
You know what?
Okay,
that's not a bad way to go. Speaking of interaction, though, my goodness, the draft ratings are in, and they are a bonanza. Shedeur Sanders, tip of the cap to him and I guess all the teams that passed on him, because that was apparently the driver in the ratings being ridiculously high for days 2 and 3. What do you make of it, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. Look, Johnny Manziel in 2014, he slipped toward the bottom of round one. That made for a crazy Thursday night of the draft. But in this case, the slide continued through Friday. The numbers were up significantly. And then into Saturday, and I'd love to see the breakdown, because if 4.3 million viewers watched the draft on all platforms on Saturday, I suspect at some point it dropped, probably after Sanders was drafted, which would mean before he was drafted, it's going to be a lot higher than 4.3 million. That was the story. That was the thing that drove it. We've seen it all weekend long. The story I wrote last Friday night about the possibility of Sanders trying to go back and play college for another year, I believe has ended up being our most viewed story in 23 and a half years history of ProFootballTalk.com. That was the thing. The planets lined up perfectly for everyone but Shedeur Sanders on draft weekend.
That's it. You know, people are interested in the story because there was absolute dissonance from what we knew him to be. Most draft grades had him at a second round player at worst. He's a quarterback. To see what happened, that hasn't happened like that, that kind of fall in years. And, you know, even Johnny Manziel ends up still getting drafted in the first round. How do you put that into perspective here when you consider what did happen with him?
And I think what happened, and it's a great question, and it's interesting to try to understand why we didn't really know what we should have known. And some of the stuff that was out there pre-draft was very broad. And I don't like granting anonymity to a source for the spewing of opinions. That makes us as the media no different than a social media platform where someone can hide behind their obscure username. I want specifics, and there were no specifics. There was the notion after the combine that he's brash and arrogant. Well, okay, aren't most quarterbacks brash and arrogant, and isn't that what we want? So that was easy to dismiss. And then there was the quote that went viral from the NFL.com 20,000-word article about all the different quarterbacks, about how he's just not that good, and I've never seen someone so entitled. And yet, look, I want specifics. And in this case, the specifics came after the fact, and I think this is the most important specific. His interactions with teams when it's time to go to the whiteboard, regurgitate the information they gave you ahead of time, show that you are taking this very seriously. I believe at the end of the day, he didn't take the process seriously. And I don't think his dad took the process seriously in 1989. He tells a story about meeting with the Giants. They drop a binder in front of him with this long test. He says, "When do you guys pick?" They said, "Number 18. He said, "I don't have time for this. I'm going to be gone by the time you guys are on the clock." Deion had the rare once-in-a-lifetime talent that allowed him to have that attitude. Shador doesn't have that same level of talent. He wasn't separate and apart from everyone else. And also at the quarterback position, you have to show that you're going to bring to the table the commitment necessary to study and to learn and to read and to influence your teammates to take it all seriously too. I think that fundamentally, as manifested by the reports of some of these interactions when it was time to go to the whiteboard and the impression that he wasn't taking the process seriously, I think that's the thing more than anything else that caused the slide.
I think the motley crew that is the Cleveland Browns quarterback room right now poses an even more interesting question as to what kind of chance will a fifth round pick, given that it is still Shador Sanders and another guy who was picked ahead of you in Dillon Gabriel, is in that quarterback room. Will he get a fair shot, shake, however you want to put it? How do you see this playing out, Mike?
I think the question is, will the other quarterbacks on the team get a fair shake? Now, they've got five. I believe Deshaun Watson will not play this year. I think he'll be on the physically unable to perform list all year long. Okay, so it leaves us with four. Between Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett, my guess is one of them isn't going to be there week one. Both have guaranteed pay, but it's not significant. I think one or the other will be traded or released. It'll be Dillon Gabriel, Shador Sanders, and someone else. And the question becomes, even though Shador Sanders was the fifth round pick two rounds after Dillon Gabriel, will there be a thumb put on the scale if all things are relatively equal? And there's no mathematical equation that says how you should set your depth chart. And the Browns last year were continuing to play Deshaun Watson when anyone with any amount of sense knew he should have been benched. Why were they doing it? They were still desperate to justify the trade and the contract. So if you've got ownership, and I thought that shot from the draft room was great because they say that the owner allows them to do their jobs. Yes, do your job while the owner is hovering over your shoulder as you're trying to do your job. Anybody that's ever been in that situation knows you can't do your job when your boss is hovering over your shoulder. You're thinking, okay, should I do what I think's right here, or should I do what I think the person breathing down my neck thinks I should do? And if ownership wants Shador Sanders on the field, if it's close, or maybe even if it isn't, it's going to be Shador Sanders. So I think he'll start at some point this year. I think they're going to want to be able to justify why they were the ones that stopped the slide. And I feel bad for Dillon Gabriel. He's the only one that has no real say in this. There's no transfer portal he can enter. He's stuck now in this competition that could be rigged against him.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that would be the second part to it all. You guys need to remind me a little bit later on about a boss looking over my shoulder story that happened at this very radio station.
Okay, we'll do that.
Yes.
I need to tune in and listen.
Lawyer Mike Florio.
Is this an on-air or on-air conversation?
No, it can be on air. We'll patch you in while you're eating your lunch. In just a little bit. You don't have to say a word.
Nice to have a lawyer on retainer for these moments, yes, Mike. Thanks for playing.
Mike, breaking news today in the NFL from Tom Pelissero and maybe others, maybe you. Prank call fallout. The NFL fined the Falcons $250,000 and defensive coordinator Jeff Albrich $100,000 over the leak of the Shador Sanders phone number. What say you about that?
Yeah, I got the statement from the NFL, too. However, the reporters who are on the NFL's payroll, I think, get those statements a little bit earlier than the rest of us do. But I think the NFL was in a tough spot here because, on one hand, they had to do something. It was a bad look for everyone involved that Shador Sanders' phone number was available to Jeff Albrich. It was on an open iPad. His 21-year-old son saw it and took it down with the intent of making that prank call. I think they had to do something. But on the other hand, the NFL has responsibility here. And I already see at least one reporter who's on the NFL's payroll pushing the idea that, hey, these numbers are sent out confidentially and the team has to treat it confidentially. And there's no reason for the team to give this to the defensive coordinator. Not in this case, because I've seen the two communications that went out. The first one was the confidential email, and it wasn't an email, it was a memo with the numbers of the 16 players who were at the draft, 24 players who were participating virtually, and five other players who were part of the international program who were present in Green Bay. Had all their numbers. There was another email that went out later that same day that had one person's number, Shedeur Sanders. It had his new number, which apparently was the right number to get through to him when the prank call went.
Clearly.
Oh,
that
wow.
was an email, and I have this email. It was sent to the same list of recipients that get the daily transaction report that the NFL sends out to everyone. So don't pay no attention to whatever propaganda the NFL is going to put out there now through their in-house reporters. That email went directly to Jeff Ulbrich. That's how he got it. That's on the NFL. And at the end of the day, when the NFL is trying to figure out how do we prevent this in the future, there's one important way that you do it. You restrict it to a need-to-know range of people. Owner, GM, coach. No one else needs to have it. And you could argue that only one person per team needs to have the phone numbers of the prospects. That's what the NFL needs to do. They have culpability here, but I feel like they thought they had to do something. And some will suggest that maybe they even went a little easier on the Falcons than they otherwise would have, because Rich McKay, an executive with the Falcons, is the chairman of the competition committee. And whenever the Falcons get in trouble, people say, hey, did they get a slap on the wrist when they had fake crowd noise and they got caught red-handed? Did they get the punishment they should have gotten when they tampered with Kirk Cousins last year and Darnell Mooney, frankly, and it was blatant? Did they really get the punishment they should have gotten? And I think that's a fair question here, because I think having an executive from your team in an influential position at the league level has benefits like what we might have seen in the total magnitude of the punishment that was levied against the Falcons and Ulbrich.
This segment with Mike Florio is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And Mike, I think the other part of this that is disturbing to me is that maybe it's not a surprise, but the fact that a 21-year-old felt emboldened enough to be able to do this and then thought that that was a good idea just makes me wonder, like, what are the discussions like when it comes to you and your dad, who's entitled to very private and confidential and protected NFL information?
Yeah, I mean, I think most reasonable children understand there are certain things that you don't mess with. Dad's or mom's work would be, I mean, there's not even a conversation to be had. You don't even have the devil on one shoulder, angel on the other. This is a case where the angel mops up the floor with the devil. You never even get down that road of whether or not you should mess with any of the information relevant to mom's or dad's job. And the question this raises for me, now, I know there are going to be people who think this is a reach. I don't think it is, because I think one of the NFL's biggest concerns needs to be safeguarding confidential information that could be used for gambling. And if a 21-year-old and his buddies think it would be funny to get Shedeur Sanders' number and prank call him, are there 21-year-olds out there who can get a little glimpse of who's really injured, who isn't injured, who's going to be featured this week in the offensive game plan, other inside information that they could use when they go to their DraftKings and FanDuel apps and make their bets? I don't think that's a stretch. And I've been banging the drum for 7 years now that the NFL needs to be far more concerned about protecting that kind of what they call in the stock market material non-public information. And we only know about this because they did the prank call.
And the video.
If others are getting this information and they're using it, and it's so far removed from any player or team or coach, it's not going to send up any red flags. How much inside information is being used by people the wrong way for gambling, and how much of it is coming from the confidential information that is made available to coaches, executives, and others?
I think the other thing, Mike, is the kid's not 12. He's 21. That's like people keep talking about him like they're infantilizing him. He's a 21-year-old. He's an adult. So like I just have a real problem with the fact that, oh, kids will be kids. He's an adult. You could say he's a college kid, whatever, but really he is an adult.
Oh, you're right. And it's fair game here. And look, Jeff Ulbrich's a football coach, and you know, he kind of got an edge to him. And hey, I'm not one to say what's right or what's wrong when it comes to parenting. There's no manual. And if you think there is, you're wrong. But to not have this kid appropriately fearful of the hell that will rain down upon him if he messes with his dad's work-related information, that's astounding to me. It really is. And And that just assumes that the story the Falcons gave us on Sunday is true. I don't know what really happened. The idea that there just happened to be an open iPad laying around. And also, I'm sure the folks at Microsoft that pay hundreds of millions per year for the sponsorship for the Surface to the league, they weren't thrilled that it was an open iPad that was mentioned in the statement. But it seems like you could make the argument that they came up with the most innocuous explanation possible, and that there could be more to how this kid got access to that email.
And does he realize how mean it was? And I'm like trying to put myself, I did a lot of dumb things when I was 21. I mean, I probably made some prank calls when I was 21 years old in the good old days when there wasn't caller ID and things like that. But
man, you're old.
Yeah, I am old. It's just mean, man. Like at the end of the day, this is like one of those, I can't find the funny in it.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I grew up in the days well before caller ID. And we only had three TV channels to entertain us. We had no video games, at least not until the late 70s when they came out with that crappy Atari home system that got old after about 20 minutes. We used to get together at a friend's house every Thursday night and make prank calls. We'd pull out the phone book back when they had phone books.
Yep.
And we'd randomly go through and we'd think, hey, what are we going to do on this one? It was like the Jerky Boys.
Yep.
And it was funny. But the difference here is, and when you see the videos of how some of these guys break down crying, I mean, this is the culmination of everything they've ever done athletically, everything they've worked for, and they've been waiting. And there's so much anxiety. I asked Aston Genty last week, as you enter draft week, I talked to him on Monday, like, how much of you is, I'm going to savor this because I'm never going to be in this stage of my life ever again? And how much of it is, can we just get this over with? And to have a guy on the brink of thinking, this is finally over with, I've finally reached the finish line of this long journey, that takes what otherwise would be, ha ha, that's funny, and makes it extremely cruel to the individual who gets that call.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's there's no way to look at this other than that was just bad all the way around. That's how I feel about it. There's no excuse for this ever happening. And I think you're right. The NFL could have gone even harder if it had wanted to. Mike Florio with Pro Football Talk. We always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us on Rahimi and Harris with Mark Rohde on
Wait,
the score.
Mike, what's for lunch? Yeah. I need to know.
Yeah, I don't know. I got several things to choose from today.
Oh.
So I don't know. I need to get a wheel that I can spin. This is one of those days where I don't really know, and that's part of the fun. I'm going to go figure it out right now.
I'm feeling
As
sushi.
I listen for the story on the time that the boss was hovering over your shoulder.
That's a good
call.
I'm
heading to odyssey.com right now.
I love the plug.
Love the promo. Thank you so much, Mike. And we're looking forward to the lunch wheel as well.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Have a great week. See you.
Thank you. That was Mike Florio. We love talking football and just life with him and obviously legal matters. He's a man of all seasons.
I love Mike Florio. I love how emboldened he is in every opinion that he has because they're all fact-based, but then he'll also just tell you some crazy stuff out like bears too.
My cousins and I were in a basement in Elmhurst one time, and we were making prank calls. We were probably like 9 or 10. It was like Thanksgiving or something.
9 or 10?
And the Grody cousins.
All the parents are upstairs. The kids are all downstairs. They were we're making. And then the chief of police called the house. We're all like, we're like running. Like the parents came down, and the cops. That set, you talk about being scared straight. We thought we were going to jail. Man,
appropriate level of fear.
I can't believe the chief came. That's how you drop the hammer.
Well, right, you know, it's like semi-small town of Elmhurst, Illinois, so who knows, maybe they had a direct dial to the house. I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. Well, that's Confessions with Mark Grody.
Yes.
We have more here to come, of course, on Rahimi and Harris. The White Sox have a prospect development problem that is going from bad to worse.
Uh-oh.
It's not great.
And it would be fine if it was somebody who wasn't as valuable to the franchise. But Colson Montgomery's issues need to be discussed. We will do that next on The Score.
Rahimi and Harris.
Who is calling on our Score hotline? It's brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois.
Who's calling?
Hey! Ozzy!
It has been very great news to see you got your own show. You earned it. You deserve it. Now you have it.
Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score.
to get in the psyche of a hitter is probably a place where you don't want to go at any stage. So to get him out of that environment, not worry about his numbers, and, you know, focus on some adjustments, both, you know, physical and certainly approach to be able to improve some things. So, yeah, we look forward to this opportunity to do it, and he's on board, and we think good things will come out of it.
That was White Sox general manager Chris Getz talking about somebody who we're trying to figure out how they fit in, not only on the team, but just in the organization right now, in Colson Montgomery, who's being sent to Arizona because he had been struggling at the AAA level. Since being promoted to Charlotte in 2024, he had been batting .204 in 153 games. He had a back issue at spring training that caused him to be sent back to Charlotte. I can't figure out where he's supposed to be right now, and unfortunately, I don't think he can either.
Well, that's not really what he's supposed to be doing. That's the organization's job to figure out what exactly he needs, and I guess this is the approach they decided to go with, getting him individual instruction back in Arizona, which is also the site of the last time he was productive, which was Arizona Fall League. I think the issue here is this is the guy that came into the season as the number four White Sox prospect and the number 36 overall prospect by MLB Pipeline. And the fact that he hasn't done anything of note besides that Arizona Fall League time in the last, since the start of last season, that gives me pause overall. When people were talking about him in spring training as, hey, he's going to be the opening day shortstop, that's what it's looking like, I was like, based off what? And they're like, well, you know, he had a good Arizona Fall League. I was like, is that the measuring stick now? And I get that he's supposed to be advancing because of his age, how long he's been in the minor leagues, but at some point you've got to have production that matches the merit of a call-up, no matter how highly thought of you are as a prospect.
Yeah, he had done that, though. That was the thing. The reason they talked about him the way they did at spring training was because that was the indication that he was making the turn. And I had said, I understand you're hurt, but at some point I wonder about diminishing returns for some of these guys in the minor leagues. It's not like he's taking somebody's spot who's a big deal on this team. Like, I hate to be so blunt about it, but your shortstop had been DFA'd by you in January, and you bring him back. So that's how you feel about this. Now, people will say, yes, that Jacob Anaya is a defensive first shortstop. Yes, okay, sure, but that's another way of saying he doesn't provide offense. You know, that's an unfortunate situation. The reality is that, to me, this says more about the entire organization right now and where they are than I think even just the individual's path. Where's the development for somebody like this?
When you say he had turned
the corner, where's the help? Where is the evaluation? Why did it fail so badly? What about big league camp was such an issue where you're now having to go all the way back to Arizona during the season?
Well, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the 43 strikeouts and 103 plate appearances this season in AAA. But
I know what the numbers are, but why are the numbers the way they are?
Because he hasn't been good. I don't know if it's his back injury.
Yes, he hasn't been good.
No, I'm saying I don't know if it's his back injury and an extension of that or whatever. What I'm saying is I didn't see anything last year that said I agree with your point about the development has not been there, clearly, because he has not taken a step forward. My point was, what step forward did he ever take to say he should be on the major league roster besides it's a bad major league roster, so he should be on the roster? I think that's my overall point. He hit .214 last year, and you don't have to make this a batting average thing. You could say he slugged .381. That's like his OPS was .710, but he wasn't good last year in the minor leagues. That was my point. He just wasn't good. So the question we should be asking is, who's not getting the development done, or is this a Colson Montgomery specific problem?
We could also ask the same question about Matt Shaw. Like, which one of these two hot prospects, infield prospects, Matt Shaw or Colson Montgomery, is going to end up being a better major league player? I don't know.
But Matt Shaw
actually did stuff last year.
Was that?
Matt Shaw did stuff last year in the minor leagues.
Right.
He was good.
My issue is the Cubs did not lose the most games in Major League history last season. They have had prospects that we thought came online, Matt Mervis, and it turns out that they do have talent. They just needed perhaps a change of scenery or a different voice. This is a White Sox team that DFA'd people like Jorge Vera, who had significant value with the team. And this is since Chris Getz has become the GM. And you DFA him and you get nothing. Not only are you setting your farm system back because you've decided major prospects are now graded no prospect, you also came in saying you wanted to develop people and bring in tools. And he's talked about some of the advances that the scouts and maybe at the minor league level they've also made on this team. But this is an organizational failure to have something like this happen, either in the ranking or in the production or in the lack of getting him what he needs. And what concerns me is the red flag here speaks to a bigger issue that was the reason this man, Chris Getz, got hired in the first place.
You were told that he was going to fast forward things because he was already familiar with the organization. But I was like, wait, what was his job before? That didn't fit at the time to me. But I was like, I guess that's what they're going to do.
It's not just that. It wasn't just the timeline issue. It was also the fact that he said stuff like, I don't like our team. And when he was saying that, he meant like the makeup of how they're getting from the minor leagues and the development to the big leagues.
And he was in charge of...
Precisely. That's, yes. Again, another thing I was going to point out is that he was in charge of that. So when this happens, this is an indictment of you as well. You know, Brian Bannister, we've talked a lot about what he's brought as a positive to the organization and how he can figure out how players fit in on the team. You get a guy like Eric Fetty, you know, you develop him, you take a risk on him, and you're able to somewhat trade him for some value. But, you know, the return is arguable at that point. But the point is, like, that is a good example of what you can do at this point in your situation as a team and an organization. But there is a lot of truth to be told here as to the failure of this one individual and the lack of being able to develop or something happening. Is this a change of scenery situation for him? Either way, to have the major league grade of such a high prospect when these are people evaluating the minors en masse, this is an issue.
It ruins what teams that are 100 lost teams need, and that is light at the end of the tunnel, something to attach your fandom to, something to attach your hope to. And guess what? We all obsessed. You know, you talked about like why his name is so out there. It's because we all attached ourselves to Colson Montgomery. We said, wow, Colson Montgomery, this guy's going to be great. When are they going to call him up? Is he going to break spring with the team? And then all of a sudden he starts to take this slide down, and then the slide becomes precipitous. And now we're in a place of, oh man, if this guy is not good, where's the hope coming from? Because in all teams, like you go back to the Cubs when they sucked and they were losing 100. At least you had draft picks that you were looking forward to. You had light at the end of the tunnel. Most teams do. The Sox have lost back-to-back 100. They've had back-to-back 100 lost seasons, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
And they're playing host to a team coming up over the weekend that had three back-to-back 100 lost seasons in the Astros, and they took advantage of the 3-1-1s. Now you can't do that.
It's a great example. That's the best example.
That is the example, but here's the other part of it is, yeah, they had guys grade no prospect too. And they had high names like Delino DeShields at one point, I think, was graded no prospect. You know, and he of course was able to get back in. John Singleton's a great story with them. You know, he was a focal point of a massive trade, and then ends up the Hunter Pence trade, and then ends up, you know, making it with the big league team 10 years later.
Great call.
10 years later. That's not the point. The point is you don't have very many of these guys in your organization.
Yeah.
Edgar Caro gets called up. Edgar Caro's the product of the trade that involved Renato Lopez and Lucas Giolito. They were products of previous trades of big league talent. Where's your growth when it comes to people who are in your system?
Chase Meidroth, I guess you got it.
Meidroth was the product of a trade.
Kyle Teal, product of a trade.
Yeah.
That's my point. Like, some of these, you have to draft and be able to develop these individuals. And the GM that is in the chair right now was hired to do that.
I think the point about the draft, that actually makes sense. Like, where are the homegrown prospects, not guys that you acquired from casting off? Although the Eric Fetty is a very good example of the things that they should be doing in this time. Sign as many guys that you know you can flip at the deadline.
And listen, Sean Burke is a good example of developing talent. Like, I've loved how they view pitching as an organization. I've loved how they develop it. But on the other side of this, I feel bad for this individual. I feel bad for Colson Montgomery. I feel bad for the whole situation. But worse than that, I feel bad for the organization. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm also thinking of the Sun-Times sports cover that came out. And it's a picture of Luis Robert on the ground, and it says 2024 was the worst ever, but unfortunately 2025 is feeling a lot like it. And that's what you don't want. You know, I know what it's like to cover 100 lost teams back-to-back, and ultimately there is some improvement. I know what it was like to cover this White Sox team when they were rebuilding and there was improvement.
Did you cover the Astros? Is that you?
Yes.
Did? Oh, that the back-to-back?
But, yeah. But okay. Also Tim Anderson, you know, at the time was a good indication of the team being on the upswing. Not only did they call him up, but you saw the game slow down for him in incredible ways. Jose Abreu was still a cornerstone of this team, giving you his best years. There were other pieces to it that made it work.
Moncada. I mean, I know that was a trade.
Product of a trade.
Pretty shrewd trade. It felt like it at the time.
Well, and that's it. But yeah. They still wanted to make those guys come online. And I don't know. I don't know why this upsets me so much, but I think it's just... This is an indication of the health of the organization or minor league development, too.
Was Gurriel a Houston draft pick?
Yes. Okay. He was an international bonus pool.
Okay, I have healthy fear of all the Gurriels, just like the Alous. No, any
that's
family.
Fair.
Yuli
yeah.
is
that's fair.
40 yeah. and still a threat at the bat.
Scary.
Like, still a threat at the plate.
How many Gurriels are there? There's at least two Gurriels.
There's, I think, three.
They scare all of them scare me.
Well, I think when you look at the White Sox specifically right now, you kind of have to take a step back so you can get a wider view. The problem is, when I take a step back, I see a wider view of more of the same.
I mean, but that's the, you know, it's, if you look at the Sun-Times sports page today, that's the indication as well. But either way, when you're talking about the why, when you're finding the whys, and I mean to say that as a trigger on purpose.
Matt Nagy, yes.
This is an example of what isn't happening that needs to.
Wait and see is the only thing I can say at this point, because we're waiting for that next wave of guys to come up.
Here's the thing. You can say that about literally every segment in our show, wait and see.
No, no. Well,
we're going to wait and see what happens tonight with the Cubs. We're going to wait and see what happens with the Bears.
No. But I'm saying, when I talk about the Cubs, I'm talking about specific things that I want to see. With this wait and see, it's when I ask, what do I want to see? They're not changing anything within this organization tonight.
I'm worried that we aren't the only observers in this, that people who should be taking action to circumvent these problems
within the organization, you're saying,
like, do they need more people? Do they need somebody else on
or
this?
Do they need better people?
Do they know how to sign players other than Andrew Benintendi, who did
because,
homer last
because
night?
Here's what concerns me is if this guy goes to another team or something, you know, and
it's good.
chances are if you sell low on him, for example, and you don't get anything in return,
yeah,
you know, that's what you don't want. That is an indictment of an organization.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if your prospects fail and you don't have somebody else behind him that everybody is getting excited about, then that's a real problem. It's a confused organization. It's, you know, and you can't lose back-to-back 100 games in a season and not have something to look forward to.
Well, either way, I hope I see the day where he's up at the big league level.
Yuli Gurriel was DFA'd yesterday? Yes! I don't have to be so scared.
Until somebody else picks him up.
Until there's another Gurriel that comes along. I don't know how many Gurriels
you're
are
right
out
about
there.
That, though. Yeah. It's, you know, it's strong genes in the
seriously,
team Gurriel.
There
yeah.
is no doubt about it. Alomar's, Alous, they all scare me. The baseball families frighten me. The Boones, man.
By the way, I want to hear this story that you alluded to with Mike Florio. You want to do it at halftime?
That sounds great.
Next, it is Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi. Halftime on the Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
It is halftime on the Rahimi and Harris Show featuring Mark Grody on this Wednesday. And so far on the show, we talked about how the Cubs did exactly what they were supposed to do. They beat the Pirates. They did it well. 9-0 says it all. But then we had an injury scare with Shohei Imanaga. So we wanted to know on our topic of the day, how much can an injury hurt the Cubs? Where can they at least afford to lose one? Coach Eli Drinkwitz from the University of Missouri joined us at 10:45. If you missed that, to talk about Luther Burden, you can go back and listen on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. Mike Florio was with us at 11, and we just discussed Colson Montgomery having to now go to Arizona in the middle of the minor league season.
It's nap time.
All right, Mark Rohde, you alluded to this story with Mike Florio.
Yeah.
Boss looking over your shoulder, and then you got Florio really interested. So what happened?
Yeah, so here's what went down. We do appreciate Mike Florio for continuing to tune in on the Odyssey app, presumably while he's eating his lunch right now. And yeah, he was talking about the concept of a boss looking over your shoulder. First of all, shout out to Mitch Rosen, who just brought us a spread of food. Shout out, Starbucks deliciousness, very generous. And now I have to tell the story.
Well, yeah, he's not looking over our shoulder. He's just looking out.
Totally look it out. So when I was doing Cubs pre and post, it was in the year 2016 when great things happened for the Cubs. During the World Series run, and I think during the entire playoff run, we were doing massive pregame shows, of course. We were doing like three-hour bonanzas, and my executive producer for those was Mitch Rosen, I learned very quickly why he became a program director, because the man is fantastic at executively producing, getting guests, coming up with topic ideas. I was like, this guy is putting on a clinic. However, during the game, or during the pregame show, Mitch, of course, entitled to be in the booth with us. I wanted him in the booth with us, but he would stand right behind me. He would stand, like, hovering over me with all my notes and things like that, and just, you know, kind of hanging out back there. And it got to a point where I did have to say to Mitch Rosen, the boss, the big boss here at the Score, Mitch, can you please do me a favor and not stand right behind me while I'm doing the pregame show? And he was immediately like, oh, yeah, no problem, sir. No problem, Mr. Grody. Do you need anything else? Like, of course, he was then making fun of me back. But, of course, he obliged, and he moved away from me. So that is the story of Mitch Rosen hanging over me during the 2016 World Series run.
Turn my mic on! Yeah, he was just looking after you. That's the thing.
I know he was. I know, but I had to tell the story of a boss hanging over me.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I usually brought the show to a halt here. So
yeah.
I told people a couple of weeks ago about the Oscars and how they were actually finally going to make people who voted on the Oscars, you know, watch the movies they were voting on.
Groundbreaking.
I didn't know that this was a thing, but now they have new rules in place. You have a portal you go to as a voter and you watch the movie and they can see that you're watching the movie. But now we have people saying they just hit play and walk away and do other things.
Then you don't deserve to be a part of the Motion Picture Academy.
I don't know what we're doing here. This, you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember when college football coaches were just handing their ballots for the coaches poll to other people?
Yes. Like, or they would vote for themselves, which I would 100% also do. I'd be like, yeah, my team is number one.
Even if your team was like 6-5?
I don't care. I've got my vote.
Oh my goodness. So they would hand it off to like a PR guy in there, a sports information director or an assistant coach. And I'm like, no, this is your vote. Stand on your vote.
Yeah.
Do the requisite research required. It's an honor to be a voter, which is also why I'm glad that we don't depend on the coaches poll for anything anymore.
The AFCA coaches poll?
Yes, we don't need that. Remember, it was the ESPN USA Today coaches poll?
What? How do you feel about UPI? What about the Reuters poll?
Oh, I like UPI.
There used to be a UPI poll.
We had some UPI national champions.
It was AP, UPI, and coaches?
Yeah, they used to not always agree on things, but here's my thing. The Academy needs to get this together and figure it out. I don't know what the answer is, but they need to have an answer because people invest a lot. And your careers, there are careers in that industry that are dependent on whether they are, A, nominees for awards, and of course, if they take home the trophy.
Yeah, the people that didn't watch the movies should be fired. They should not be a part of that. That's ridiculous that it even got to a point where it should be like that.
Come on. It's the one of the most exclusive clubs there is, and as we understand now, it has so much to do with like what goes on behind the scenes politically. And when I say politically, I mean like the inner workings of who supports who in the Motion Picture Academy and all of that. Like, it's, I can't even imagine. Like, to not watch, it'd be like us not watching Bears games.
Right, right. You can't watch the condensed version of the sports every single day. Like, you gotta be real to the listener, and these folks need to be real to the actors. Like you said, I mean, that's a big damn deal, winning the Oscars.
Let me give you a quote. Furthermore, an unnamed executive said they would favor films they were working on themselves. I call this the Layla Rahimi work.
Hey, I don't vote for anything, quote, except for like actual things that are elections.
Quote, you think I'm voting against my own campaign, they exclaimed. I'm voting for my stuff. That was a quote.
Let me ask you guys
but
a quick question.
I think they get a consensus together and get as many people as they can to vote for their stuff.
That's true.
And then
that, we know that happens.
They put those people in those movies moving forward.
If you could vote on anything in sports, what would it be? Heisman, like Hall of Fame,
one time or
NBA MVP,
NBA MVP,
one okay. time or
no
repeatedly every year get to vote.
Yeah, repeatedly. You can only choose
okay,
one thing.
It would be MVP.
Okay,
in the NBA specifically.
I'm probably voting for Nikola Jokic if that's the move today.
I need some time. It might be Shea. It might be SGA.
See, we take it seriously.
Yeah, I would
need to.
I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to vote for this person right now. I've watched a lot of NBA basketball, as I always do, but I haven't watched enough to just right here on the air right now put on the spot, say that person deserves the MVP.
Also, haven't you done the thing where like they hand you the form to vote for, like if you're at a bowl game or something, you've got to vote for MVP of the bowl game. I take that so seriously.
I take it super seriously.
You should. Absolutely.
I wait till the last possible moment to make
there's enough,
my
oh,
vote.
Man. There's enough people I got to really look into this.
Yeah, there's enough people who brag about not taking these things seriously, and they should have their cards pulled too.
Also, it's people's money. This is people's livelihoods that you're messing with.
Or just a really big deal, even if it's not money.
Also, Hall of Fame votes in baseball should be made public, every last one of them.
And if you don't vote, that should also be made public.
Yep.
That's another topic for another day. You know what's not? Five on It, where we ask five questions that are on our minds, and one of them I got via a request on Instagram, and guess what? The question ripping the internet apart? We'll take a look at it next. Raheem Harris, Grody on the Score.